Welcome to Run With It, Canada's running fitness and health program. On this month's episode, I was in conversation with Flobo Boyce, who talks about his weight loss journey. So stay tuned for that. But first, let's go to the Sports Doctor is In segment. Check this out.
Joining me today is Dr. Bob Well, known as Dr. Bob, who is a respected sports podiatrist and radio host of the Sports Doctor. Dr. Bob is back on the show to talk about common running injuries and prevention. Welcome back, Dr. Bob.
Hi, Christine. It's always good to see you. I don't know. I think we're in our fourth year, maybe longer than that, that I've showed up once a month. The Sports Doctor is In. Of course, Your show is called Run With It. You were a very serious runner. You're still putting in the miles. And we really want to give some tips on some of the common problems we see in running and some of the things that are so important in prevention. Especially if you've got a history of problems, you really want to be paying attention. Everything from, are you in the best shoe for your particular foot mechanics? Are you paying any attention to strengthening your feet and ankles? And are you dealing with paying attention if you had a history of problems, the things that we want? And runners are famous for this, trying to push through problems and sometimes ending up with a lot more of a serious problem than not. And what better time to discuss it than the Olympics, when everybody's running, jumping. It's an exciting time to see. The biggest problem we see in runners is plantar fasciitis, problems with heel discomfort and arch discomfort at all levels, at all ages. And sometimes it could be a real a hassle to get rid of because, again, people are in a hurry with that scenario. If you are a runner, by the way, you want to include podiatry as one of your team members. Again, whether you're in the best shoe for you, whether you've had a history of problems, you're the most talented runner, we want that supervision regarding, again, strengthening, proper stretching, and trying to stay out of trouble. So when we've got plantar fasciitis, when we've got many times it's first thing in the morning, people might say the first couple of steps out of it, wow, my heel's hurting me. Then you want to be paying attention. The plantar fascia is the strong band on the bottom of the foot that connects the toes to the heel. The most common area is the heel area, the attachment of the plantar fascia to the heel. And quite often it is related, especially if it's recurrent or if it's problematic. You know, Dr. Weil, it's bothered me forever at one time or another, et cetera, et cetera. We want to be paying big attention to the role of foot. Do you have a high arch? Are you very flat-footed? Are you bow-legged? Are your leg lengths equal? All of these factors go into prevention of staying out of trouble. And we might see that we might look at intelligent rest. If you've got plantar fasciitis, you need to back off. Unless you're in the Olympics, then you might try to push through it. There was Simone Biles, man. We thought she injured her calf and limping around, and she comes out and does all sorts of spectacular things. We lucked out with that one. And any kind of tendonitis, Achilles tendonitis, is another problem we see in runners, Christine, where there's pain of the tendon itself, where it attaches to the heel, and where it attaches to that whole calf area. So that's another problem area. Shin problems, shin splints, very big deal in runners. When it's persistent, it's foot-related. Almost always. So again, we want the role of podiatry. If you're a real smart runner, you'll pay attention to orthotics. You don't need trouble to benefit from orthotics. Proper biomechanical devices, custom orthotics for that particular person, whether they're 9 years old or 90 years old, is almost always a step up in prevention. Being able to control the important motions of the foot. Foot, ankle are complicated motions normally. Terms all you runners are very familiar with. Pronation and supination. They're both normal. pronation and supination. Pronation allows the foot to absorb shock. Every time you land on your heel, pronation is starting, absorb shock. Maybe 50% of your weight every step you take. You start running, you're tripling it already. The forces that are going up your foot, ankle, knees, and legs. Pronation allows your foot to shape to the ground. Imagine you're walking on the grass barefoot. Pronation allows your foot to adapt to the surface. And at the same time, your knee is rotating inward. So if you pronate excessively, you're rotating your knee, you're straining your knee in many instances. Pronation lasts, Christine, until you bear weight. Once you pass over the foot, pronation is done. Now supination, your ability to push off. The foot lines up, the big toe lines up to give us a spring-like push-off mechanism to push us forward. When we see that again, if the timing is off, we could be running into trouble. That's many times where orthotics come in. If the foot is pronated excessively, we're stretching the arch. We're straining the arch, a la plantar fasciitis. If we're pronating excessively, we're putting tension on the tendon that attaches into the arch, that runs down the whole shin, the posterior tibial tendon. Shin splints, runner's knee. Oh, by the way, girls are different than boys, Christine. The mechanics are different. Young girls develop wider hips. They go through puberty. So the adult woman runner has wider hips and a different angle. It's called the Q angle, down to the knee. And this is why we see at all levels, there's more knee problems in girls than boys and women than men, including the serious ACL problems we see more often, you know, again, in the tennis player, the basketball player, the soccer player, where that girl is running, changing direction, the pickleball player. So the general rules I want to leave you guys with really is, if you are a serious runner, it's what you love, you want to pay big attention to prevention, you want to strengthen your body, you want to include cross training. I don't care if you want a bike ride. I don't care if you want to go to the gym. If you're smart, you'll include also a physical therapist who could give you some feedback on what's some really good strengthening for you as a runner. What are the exercises he or she want you to pay attention to? So you want to be aware, again, if you had a history of problems, you should be paying attention. If you're very, very talented, then you want to absolutely include the strengthening side or the cross-training side. You know, you don't want to fall into the areas of overkill. You know, you still run 50 miles a week, right, Christine? You're running 5-6 days a week. And over the 4 years, I've tried to get you to mix in these things that are so important. Yeah. You don't. Now, again, many times a parent or the runner themselves will ask me, do I need orthotics? Does my son or daughter need orthotics? And I say, let's ask if they'd benefit. Big difference. When done properly, well, I'm talking about arch supports that you buy at the store or you get online. I'm talking about proper custom devices. Today we got high tech, man. We can use a smartphone, measure somebody for orthotic, where I've been casting people for like 40 years. So you want to pay attention to those factors, including shoes. Shoes change every time you turn around. Do you have shoes that have worked well for you? Stick with them. Replace them often if you're a serious runner, at least twice a year. You want to replace your running shoes because the shock-absorbing material starts to wear and tear. You don't need to wait till you have holes in the bottom of the shoes. You want to be changing, especially if you're running year-round, and especially if you're in different climates, like you. In British Columbia, you might be, you know, it might be winter, or you might be raining, it's snow, Chicago area. So you want to pay big attention to shoes. And you also, if you are a successful runner, you've done well, you've been very successful, you want to go lighter and lighter in your shoes. You want to even flirt with some, you know, maybe barefoot running, which is a whole other show. Yes. Then I think you can start paying attention to trying to compromise. Otherwise, stick with well-supportive, successful shoes for you. There's a lot of great brands. You know, New Balance was one of my sponsors on the Sports Doctor for a long time. They're still the best shoe for women with their width sizing, just in generalization. But there are great brands. There's Nike, there's Adidas, there's Puma, Brooks, one of our favorite brands. Be properly fit. I can't tell you how many people, women, they've had children, their shoe size is slightly different. They think they're the same shoe size. You want to be properly fit always, and you want to pay attention to width sizing. You know, believe it or not, 30-40% of all of us, Christine, we're not even fit properly when it comes to, let alone our running shoes. So you can't go wrong with a good, well-recommended running, walking shoe store who can really tune in to fitting you properly and giving you some feedback. So these are the things we want to pay big attention to, whether you're starting out, whether you're a competitor, you know, whether you are looking to really run more, get more aggressive. You know, running injuries are nauseatingly common. 50% of runners will have dealt with something, and a lot of it, again, is foot, ankle, and lower extremity. And here's my last pearl. If it's anything lower extremity, your back, your hips, your knees, that are persistently a problem, pay attention to foot mechanics. They're always related, and many times it's missed, where if someone doesn't have foot pain, they can go to 12 doctors and 3 therapists, and nobody says, let's take your shoes off and watch you walk and see what kind of foot mechanics you have. I'm exaggerating.
Dr. Bob, if people want more information, where can they go?
Well, now they can go, you know, it's funny, I'm updating my website. The new title is going to be the Foot Doctor, rather the sportsdoctorradio.com. It's not up yet. So they can go to bbsradio.com/the sports doctor, and they can go to the archives and listen to past shows. You've been on probably a dozen times over the years. They can catch you with all of the things you're doing with your career and run with it. And so that they can find that out. And when I get the website up, next time I see you, I should have it up and running. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
It's always great to be with you, Christine.
You too, Dr. Bob.
Keep running with it.
Yes. Thank you.
Joining me today is host, writer, stand-up comedian, Flobo Boyce, who hosts his own radio show called New Amsterdam. And he's here to talk about his media career, how he lost 150 pounds, and what is next for him. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always cool to talk with people who are in the media space, and you're a legend. I mean, so this is actually a fun time for me.
No, I'm so excited to have you here. And, you know, I have to say, I love your trailer. It says, "Who are you and what do you do?"
Yeah.
You are a Renaissance man.
Thank you.
Yeah, you do it all, and you do it with such passion. I mean, I look at your interviews and the trailers, and I'm talking about it, and you're passionate about what you do. So did becoming a comedian, was that the first career that came first?
Oh, that is a really, like, complex question, because that was the first dream. I grew up. My parents are working class, and so they had like 6 jobs between them. And so they're always serious and stern. You know, they were like very like stoic and stern parents, you know what I mean? And I love them to death, but that's just where they are. But I would know as a kid, the only time they laughed was when it was late night talk shows like the Jay Leno's and the Lettermans. And I was like, I wanted to do that. So comedy was like the first dream. I wanted to have my own late night talk show. I couldn't sing, I couldn't dance, I couldn't juggle. I figured, let me try the comedy thing. But I would say I was a writer first. I went to film school. I was an editor, but that's kind of like writing with pictures at the end of a movie. But then I got the passion of writing thereafter. And it was only after a near-death experience I had when I was 29, where I was like, you know, I gotta try stand-up before I kick the bucket, because you never know when you're going to kick the bucket. You think you're going to be old and gray and around loved ones in a bed, but you can get hit by a bus tomorrow. Let me try that out. So it was like writing was the first action, comedy was the first dream, and they all kind of converged.
But you know, you have a strong writing background, and that certainly helps with comedy, with your radio show, with writing in general. And so writing is really important if you have the writing bug, or you're an accomplished writer like yourself. And so I think it's wonderful. And comedian, I mean, not everyone can be a stand-up comedian. And I mean, but tell me when that pivotal moment came to you. Well, I want to be a stand-up comedy or comedian, in other words.
Yeah. So that's something I always thought about someday. Like that, there's always a dream everyone has. Like, oh man, when I turn 22, or when I get the right job, or when I have the right money. And I'm jumping ahead here, but I had lost a bunch of weight and I had excess skin. And so I had to get the skin removed. And this is what's called a flirtily amblyoplasty, or a compound tummy tuck, to get rid of 7 pounds of skin in my chest area. So I have two scars, one that runs from my chest to my pubic line, and one that runs from hip to hip, like an inverse T. So I got that done. And about 6 or 7 days afterwards, a part of my suture line had reopened, and I started to bleed out on my couch. And I thought I was going to die. And I told a story a bunch of times on different shows, so forgive me for being so flippy about it. God, I was gonna die. But I realized you freak out, like you're like, oh my gosh, the panic, the blood, and blood is a lot warmer than you think, it's a lot stickier than you think, it's like messier than you think. But then you get kind of like zen about it. You go, well, if I die, I had a good run. And I realized I had two big regrets, and it was to learn how to ride a motorcycle and to try stand-up comedy. And if I were to die then, those were the only two things I would be like, oh man, I never got a chance to do. So my mom was there at the time. She gave me a wet compress because I couldn't be moved, right? I was bleeding out so much. You really couldn't call emergency services to move me. I would have like pretty much died on the way over there. So we basically compressed this giant gash that was 4 inches long and about 1.5 inches wide. And the next day I woke up and I survived. So it like the blood had clotted into and plugged the hole, and I had survived that scare. And I said, well, this is my second lease on life. And I took my first comedy class and I got on stage 6 months after that. So it was an interesting thing where it was like, yeah, you keep thinking about someday, there may not be a someday, go ahead and do it now.
Yes. I mean, that, wow. I mean, and what kept you calm though? Like, what was it like, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, like, if you're, I know me, I'll be freaking out. Yeah. I don't know until you're in that situation, but how did you cope? Like being.
I understand now when people go into like moments of faith or moments of crisis, or they think about the ancestors or see the light, you do freak out. When you think you're going to die, you kind of get like, it's out of your hands, right? So you panic. You're like, oh, what do I do? I'm trying everything. This has never happened before. I'm calling my doctor. My doctor says, you're on your own, because he's a plastic surgeon and he's not an emergency care physician. And you can't call. You know, so you're doing all things you can do in the real world. But then there's a moment where you just give up, not give up, but you kind of go, well, if I die, it's a cool run. If I die, it's all right. If I'm okay. A Zen thing that people who have hit rock bottom will tell you, like, it's like, hey man, take me now, done it. You know what I mean? And so the comments came from that. It was automatic, I guess. I couldn't tell you, there was no protein. Yep. There was no like, what you need to do is count from 1 to 3. It was just like everything was going to end there that night. So let me be okay with it. Enjoy the last night I have. And we just, you know, put the thing together, made me comfortable, and I survived the day after.
Wow. And, you know, thank you for sharing. So from the stage to the road, or to the track, to the pavement, you started running, a marathon runner, right? Tell us, how did that come about?
Yeah, so taking a step back, I was always a heavy kid. I was the first grader that was 80 pounds. I don't know the Canadian measurements. I'm sorry. I should look this up. I'm the worst at that. but I was always a big kid, and I became a bigger teenager and a bigger adult. By the time I was 22 years old, I was about 375 pounds, or about 26.9 stone. And so for context, my pants were like size 56 waist. My shirt was 6 extra large. And so I was just heavy. I was resigned with being heavy, for what have you. But I took up running, as a way to take back the health situation, because one, it was free, right? I was a grad student. I didn't really have money for gym memberships, and I would save up money and get one personal training session, then like cancel the package, steal tips and stuff like that. But I was in my early 20s, and I was living in Southern California at the time. And I hate to say it, because we're a bit narcissistic on some level, but there was a fine young lass around my age who invited me out to Disneyland. And most times I say, if you're in your 20s and someone invites you to Disneyland, you go, okay, I'll get my goofy hat and my wallet. Let's go. I knew then that I had to think about how long could I stand on my feet? Were there going to be benches around? Could I fit in the rides? Could I fit the turnstiles? And I was in my 20s. Like, movies and TV have told me this is my prime. I shouldn't be worrying about things like that. And I always say California saved my life because it's such an image conscious state. There are diet restaurants for every diet under the sun. And so I took things one day at a time. I lost the weight eating Subway sandwiches. I was on a Subway diet. I ate the Subway Club twice a day, 6 days a week. And then I would either go to the gym when I had the money, start jogging just to, you know, get the heart moving if I couldn't afford it. Or if I didn't feel like running, or if it was like a rainy day, I would go to the bowling alley, buy 4 games, and just bowl by myself all afternoon to get the heart rate up. And that first year, I lost 80 pounds, and overall, I lost 150 pounds about 2-3 years from the day I started.
Mm. Wow, that's an incredible. And what kept you, like, did you write it down, like, in a logbook or an app, like, to keep motivated? What was it? That, because there must have been some days that, you know, you're like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I want to go for a jog. I don't know if can you share some of the moments that, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, so I had a what's called a slide belt. So it didn't have notches. It was one of those ones with two chain links and you wrap it around. And so I got to see my wins doing that. Because if you have a lot of weight to lose, you don't notice it first, and it takes everyone else a long time to notice it, for a bunch of reasons. Everyone was dealing with their own stuff, or they didn't want to mention something. So I lost like 40 pounds before someone's like, hey, you know what? So if you're looking for that kind of motivation, you're not going to get it. So I would look at my slide belt and look at the actual, like, progress. But there's times I get up and I don't want to run, but there's times I get up and I didn't want to work out. And I said, And I forgive me, because I know this is crass in some situations, but I go, prison inmates get an hour of exercise a day. And they're hardened criminals, right? Why am I denying myself that? I don't particularly enjoy brushing my teeth, but I have to do it multiple times a day because, you know, there's consequences if you do not. And so it was that motivation plus seeing the gains, as they say, of like that belt getting longer and longer, is what got me to go day in, day out.
And, you know, tell us about your training now.
It's an evolution, because I'm getting up there. No, I'm not getting like that, but like, I'm not 20 years old anymore. I'm in my late 30s. And so you got to be more mindful of like range of motion and importing more rest. But I will say I run about 20, 25 miles a week straight on the streets, which I now notice why people prefer treadmills, because I can feel it now in my joints. If my shoes are dead or if the street's too flat. And then I go to the gym every couple of days to alternately to do a weight training regimen just to keep the muscles strong, to keep that base going, and for fatigue's sake. And I just incorporated the rowing machine too, to make sure there's always something fresh in that routine. So I would say every day I do something, but I do alternate, whether I do straight cardio on the street by street running or park running, going to the gym and doing indoor cardio, which I hate indoor cardio, but I'll do it, or hitting the rowing machine.
Well, you know, as I said at the beginning, you know, you're so passionate about what you do, everything, like, and And so that helps. And it also brings me to the other area for being in the media and starting your own podcast. And congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
I love the name New Amsterdam. So tell our viewers and listeners, why did you call it that?
Yeah, it's actually a funny story. I actually mentioned this in my book, Graduation Day. So I'm from Brooklyn. I live in Los Angeles now, but I'm from Brooklyn. And New Amsterdam, N-E-W, is what the island of Manhattan was when it was sold to the Dutch. The legend goes $24 worth of like felt and beads and stuff. So I wanted to have a harking back to the town that raised me in New York. But the reason why it's K-N-E-W, new, two reasons. One, SEO, copyrights, all that stuff. But more importantly, I wanted to have it a pursuit of knowledge as well. So I wanted to have that like idea that you could be an elevated person trying to discover new things. New Amsterdam as a brand started off as a stationery company with plans of expanding into leisure travel, merchandise, suitcases, bags, that sort of thing. So if you're New Amsterdam affiliated, you were someone who well traveled from that city theoretically. What happened was, like most things in business, that it failed. The idea is that, and I'm getting to the weeds here, but my marketing plan relied on taking income from my day job, and I got laid off from that day job. So I didn't really have any other investors. And I said, you know what, let's try to find a way to resurrect this, because I like the idea of this city for creatives and cities for doers and cities for travelers, but it's a fake city, but it feels like a real city. But what can I do that to push that back as far as an idea? And that's when the podcast launched. The first 39 episodes was me saying, hey, if you're creative, this article would be fun for you. Something I realized, what can this sport teach us about being a creative? And then when the lockdown happened, my high school buddy called me up, and I won't forget this. She called me up. She goes, I'm going to be your guest in your podcast next week. And I go, I don't have guests on my podcast. She's like, so? And that was it. I started having guests from episode 40 on, because someone just gave me a challenge and said, I'm in it. And that's how it grew from there.
Yes. I mean, and you know, like the guests that you have is varied, right? And so, you know, people wanting to come on your show, they send you an email and you see if it's the right, you know, if it aligns, right? But pretty much people have fitness and lifestyle, right? And et cetera.
Yeah, it's a fitness, lifestyle, entrepreneurs, and creatives. And so I think I try to keep my umbrella open as far as fit is more important, because the idea of the show was getting in that year 2, year 3, year 20 kind of thing.
Thanks for watching. If you have a question or comment about today's episode, go to our website, runwithit.ca. Until next time, run with it.
Run With It is sponsored by Mallory's Fashion Network, the Rio Theater, and Craft Hair Academy.